That evening, when he got back from work, Uncle Vernon did something he'd never done before. He visited Harry in his cupboard. "Where's my letter?" said Harry, the moment Uncle Vernon had squeezed through the door. "Who's writing to me?"
"No one. It was addressed to you by mistake," said Uncle Vernon shortly. "I have burned it."
"It was not a mistake," said Harry angrily. "It had my cupboard on it."
"Silence!"
yelled Uncle Vernon, and a couple of spiders fell from the ceiling. He took a few deep breaths and then forced his face into a smile, which looked quite painful.
Yes. Harry, about this cupboard. Your aunt and I have been thinking. You're really getting a bit big for it. We think it might be nice if you moved into Dudley's second bedroom."
"Why?" said Harry.
"Don't ask questions," snapped his uncle. "Take this stuff upstairs, now."
The Dursleys' house had four bedrooms, one for Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia, one for visitors, usually Uncle Vernon's sister Marge, one where Dudley slept, and one where Dudley kept all the toys and things that wouldn't fit into his first bedroom. It only took Harry one trip upstairs to move everything he owned from the cupboard to this room. He sat down on the bed and stared around him. Nearly everything in here was broken. The month-old video camera was lying on top of a small working tank Dudley had once driven over the next-door neighbor's dog. In the corner was Dudley's first-ever television set, which he'd put his foot through when his favorite program had been cancelled. There was a large birdcage which had once held a parrot that Dudley had swapped at school for a real air rifle, which was up on a shelf with the end all bent because Dudley had sat on it. Other shelves were full of books. They were the only things in the room that looked as though they'd never been touched. From downstairs came the sound of Dudley bawling at his mother.
"I don't want him in there. I need that room. Make him get out."
Harry sighed and stretched out on the bed. Yesterday he'd have given anything to be up here. Today he'd rather be back in his cupboard with that letter than up here without it. Next morning, at breakfast, everyone was rather quiet. Dudley was in shock. He'd screamed, whacked his father with his smelting stick, been sick on purpose, kicked his mother, and thrown his tortoise through the greenhouse roof, and he still didn't have his room back. Harry was thinking about this time yesterday and bitterly wishing he'd opened the letter in the hall. Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia kept looking at each other darkly. When the mail arrived, Uncle Vernon, who seemed to be trying to be nice to Harry, made Dudley go and get it. They heard him banging things with his smelting stick all the way down the hall, and then he shouted,
"There's another one! Mr. H. Potter, the smallest bedroom, 4 Privet Drive!"
With a strangled cry, Uncle Vernon leapt from his seat and ran down the hall, Harry right behind him. Uncle Vernon had to wrestle Dudley to the ground to get the letter from him, which was made difficult by the fact that Harry had grabbed Uncle Vernon around the neck from behind. After a minute of confused fighting, in which everyone got hit a lot by the smelting stick, Uncle Vernon straightened up, gasping for breath, with Harry's letter clutched in his hand.
"Go to your cupboard. I mean, your bedroom," he wheezed at Harry. "Dudley, go. Just go."
Harry walked round and round his new room. Someone knew he had moved out of his cupboard, and they seemed to know he hadn't received his first letter. Surely that meant they'd try again, and this time he'd make sure they didn't fail. He had a plan. The repaired alarm clock rang at 6 o'clock the next morning. Harry turned it off quickly and dressed silently. He mustn't wake the Dursleys. He stole downstairs without turning on any of the lights. He was going to wait for the postman on the corner of Privet Drive and get the letters for number 4 first. His heart hammered as he crept across the dark hall towards the front door.
Ah!
Harry leapt into the air. He'd trodden on something big and squashy on the doormat, something alive. Lights clicked on upstairs, and to his horror, Harry realized that the big, squashy something had been his uncle's face. Uncle Vernon had been lying at the foot of the front door in a sleeping bag, clearly making sure that Harry didn't do exactly what he'd been trying to do. He shouted at Harry for about half an hour and then told him to go and make a cup of tea. Harry shuffled miserably off into the kitchen. By the time he got back, the mail had arrived, right into Uncle Vernon's lap. Harry could see three letters addressed in green ink. "I want," he began, but Uncle Vernon was tearing the letters into pieces before his eyes. Uncle Vernon didn't go to work that day. He stayed at home and nailed up the mail slot. "See," he explained to Aunt Petunia through a mouthful of nails, "if they can't deliver them, they'll just give up."
"I'm not sure that'll work, Vernon."
"Oh, these people's minds work in strange ways, Petunia. They're not like you and me," said Uncle Vernon, trying to knock in a nail with a piece of fruitcake Aunt Petunia had just brought him. On Friday, no less than 12 letters arrived for Harry. As they couldn't go through the mail slot, they had been pushed under the door, slotted through the sides, and a few even forced through the small window in the downstairs bathroom. Uncle Vernon stayed at home again. After burning all the letters, he got out a hammer and nails and boarded up the cracks around the front and back doors so no one could go out. He hummed tiptoe through the tulips as he worked and jumped at small noises. On Saturday, things began to get out of hand. 24 letters to Harry found their way into the house, rolled up and hidden inside each of the 2 dozen eggs that their very confused milkman had handed Aunt Petunia through the living room window. While Uncle Vernon made furious telephone calls to the post office and the dairy, trying to find someone to complain to, Aunt Petunia shredded the letters in her food processor. "Who on earth wants to talk to you this badly?" Dudley asked Harry in amazement. On Sunday morning, Uncle Vernon sat down at the breakfast table looking tired and rather ill, but happy. "No post on Sundays," he reminded them cheerfully as he spread marmalade on his newspapers. "No damn letters today." Something came whizzing down the kitchen chimney as he spoke and caught him sharply on the back of the head. Next moment, 30 or 40 letters came pelting out of the fireplace like bullets. The Dursleys ducked, but Harry leapt into the air, trying to catch one. "Out! Out!" Uncle Vernon seized Harry round the waist and threw him into the hall. When Aunt Petunia and Dudley had run out with their arms over their faces, Uncle Vernon slammed the door shut. They could hear the letters still streaming into the room, bouncing off the walls and floor. "That does it," said Uncle Vernon, trying to speak calmly but pulling great tufts out of his moustache at the same time. "I want you all back here in 5 minutes, ready to leave. We're going away. Just pack some clothes. No arguments." He looked so dangerous with half his moustache missing that no one dared argue. 10 minutes later they had wrenched their way through the boarded-up doors and were in the car, speeding towards the highway. Dudley was sniffling in the back seat. His father had hit him round the head for holding them up while he tried to pack his television, VCR, and computer in his sports bag. They drove, and they drove. Even Aunt Petunia didn't dare ask where they were going. Every now and then Uncle Vernon would take a sharp turn and drive in the opposite direction for a while. "Shake 'em off! Shake 'em off!" he would mutter whenever he did this. They didn't stop to eat or drink all day. By nightfall, Dudley was howling. He'd never had such a bad day in his life. He was hungry, he'd missed 5 television programs he'd wanted to see, and he'd never gone so long without blowing up an alien on his computer. Uncle Vernon stopped at last outside a gloomy-looking hotel on the outskirts of a big city. Dudley and Harry shared a room with twin beds and damp, musty sheets. Dudley snored, but Harry stayed awake, sitting on the windowsill, staring down at the lights of passing cars and wondering. They ate stale cornflakes and cold tin tomatoes on toast for breakfast the next day. They had just finished when the owner of the hotel came over to their table.
"Excuse me, but is one of you Mr. H. Potter? Only I got about 100 of these at the front desk."
She held up a letter so they could read the green ink address. "Mr. H. Potter, Room 17, Railview Hotel, Cokeworth." Harry made a grab for the letter, but Uncle Vernon knocked his hand out of the way. The woman stared.
"I'll take them,"
said Uncle Vernon, standing up quickly and following her from the dining room.
"Wouldn't it be better just to go home, dear?"
Aunt Petunia suggested timidly hours later. But Uncle Vernon didn't seem to hear her. Exactly what he was looking for, none of them knew. He drove them into the middle of a forest, got out, looked around, shook his head, got back into the car, and off they went again. The same thing happened in the middle of a ploughed field, halfway across a suspension bridge, and at the top of a multi-level parking garage.
"Daddy's gone mad, hasn't he?"
Dudley asked Aunt Petunia dully later that afternoon. Uncle Vernon had parked at the coast, locked them all inside the car, and disappeared. It started to rain. Great drops beat on the roof of the car. Dudley snivelled.
"It's Monday," he told his mother. "The great Humberto's on tonight. I want to stay somewhere with the television."
Monday. This reminded Harry of something. If it was Monday, and you could usually count on Dudley to know the days of the week because of television, then tomorrow, Tuesday, was Harry's 11th birthday. Of course, his birthdays were never exactly fun. Last year, the Dursleys had given him a coat hanger and a pair of Uncle Vernon's old socks. Still, you weren't 11 every day. Uncle Vernon was back, and he was smiling. He was also carrying a long, thin package, and didn't answer Aunt Petunia when she asked what he'd bought.
"Found the perfect place," he said. "Come on, everyone out."
It was very cold outside the car. Uncle Vernon was pointing at what looked like a large rock way out at sea. Perched on top of the rock was the most miserable little shack you could imagine. One thing was certain, there was no television in there.
"Storm forecast for tonight,"
said Uncle Vernon gleefully, clapping his hands together,
"and this gentleman's kindly agreed to lend us his boat."
A toothless old man came ambling up to them, pointing, with a rather wicked grin, at an old rowboat bobbing in the iron-grey water below them.
"I've already got us some rations," said Uncle Vernon, "so all aboard."
It was freezing in the boat. Icy sea spray and rain crept down their necks, and a chilly wind whipped their faces. After what seemed like hours, they reached the rock, where Uncle Vernon, slipping and sliding, led the way to the broken-down house. The inside was horrible. It smelled strongly of seaweed. The wind whistled through the gaps in the wooden walls, and the fireplace was damp and empty. There were only two rooms. Uncle Vernon's rations turned out to be a bag of chips each and four bananas. He tried to start a fire, but the empty chip bags just smoked and shriveled up.
"Could do with some of those letters now, eh?"
he said cheerfully. He was in a very good mood. Obviously, he thought nobody stood a chance of reaching them here in a storm to deliver mail. Harry privately agreed, though the thought didn't cheer him up at all. As night fell, the promised storm blew up around them. Spray from the high waves splattered the walls of the hut, and a fierce wind rattled the filthy windows. Aunt Petunia found a few mouldy blankets in the second room and made up a bed for Dudley on the moth-eaten sofa. She and Uncle Vernon went off to the lumpy bed next door, and Harry was left to find the softest bit of floor he could and to curl up under the thinnest, most ragged blanket. The storm raged more and more ferociously as the night went on. Harry couldn't sleep. He shivered and turned over, trying to get comfortable, his stomach rumbling with hunger. Dudley's snores were drowned by the low rolls of thunder that started near midnight. The lighted dial of Dudley's watch, which was dangling over the edge of the sofa on his fat wrist, told Harry he'd be 11 in 10 minutes' time. He lay and watched his birthday tick nearer, wondering if the Dursleys would remember at all, wondering where the letter writer was now. 5 minutes to go. Harry heard something creak outside. He hoped the roof wasn't going to fall in, although he might be warmer if it did. 4 minutes to go. Maybe the house in Privet Drive would be so full of letters when they got back that he'd be able to steal one somehow. 3 minutes to go. Was that the sea slapping hard on the rock like that? And 2 minutes to go. What was that funny crunching noise? Was the rock crumbling into the sea? 1 minute to go, and he'd be 11. 30 seconds, 20, 10, 9. Maybe he'd wake Dudley up just to annoy him. 3, 2, 1.
Boom!
The whole shack shivered, and Harry sat bolt upright, staring at the door. Someone was outside, knocking to come in. Chapter 4, The Keeper of the Keys.
Boom!
They knocked again. Dudley jerked awake.
"Where's the cannon?"
he said stupidly. There was a crash behind them, and Uncle Vernon came skidding into the room. He was holding a rifle in his hands. Now they knew what had been in the long, thin package he had brought with them.
"Who's there?"
he shouted.
"I warn you, I'm armed."
There was a pause, then smash! The door was hit with such force that it swung clean off its hinges and with a deafening crash landed flat on the floor. A giant of a man was standing in the doorway. His face was almost completely hidden by a long, shaggy mane of hair and a wild, tangled beard, but you could make out his eyes, glinting like black beetles under all the hair. The giant squeezed his way into the hut, stooping so that his head just brushed the ceiling. He bent down, picked up the door, and fitted it easily back into its frame. The noise of the storm outside dropped a little. He turned to look at them all.
"Couldn't make us a cup of tea, could you? It's not been an easy journey."
He strode over to the sofa where Dudley sat frozen with fear.
"Budge up, you great lump," said the stranger.
Dudley squeaked and ran to hide behind his mother, who was crouching, terrified, behind Uncle Vernon.
"And here's Harry," said the giant.
Harry looked up into the fierce, wild, shadowy face and saw that the beetle eyes were crinkled in a smile.
"Last time I saw you, you was only a baby," said the giant. "You look a lot like your dad, but you've got your mum's eyes."
Uncle Vernon made a funny, rasping noise.
"I demand that you leave at once, sir," he said. "You are breaking and entering."
"Ah, shut up, Dursley, you great prune," said the giant.
He reached over the back of the sofa, jerked the gun out of Uncle Vernon's hands, bent it into a knot as easily as if it had been made of rubber, and threw it into a corner of the room. Uncle Vernon made another funny noise, like a mouse being trodden on.
"Anyway, Harry," said the giant,
turning his back on the Dursleys,
"a very happy birthday to you. Got something for you here. I might have sat on it at some point, but it'll taste all right."
From an inside pocket of his black overcoat, he pulled a slightly squashed box. Harry opened it with trembling fingers. Inside was a large, sticky chocolate cake with "Happy Birthday, Harry" written on it in green icing. Harry looked up at the giant. He meant to say thank you, but the words got lost on the way to his mouth, and what he said instead was,
"Who are you?"
The giant chuckled.
"True, I haven't introduced myself. Rubaeus Hagrid, Keeper of Keys and Grounds at Hogwarts."
He held out an enormous hand and shook Harry's whole arm.
"What about that tea, then, eh?"
he said, rubbing his hands together.
"I'd not say no to somewhat stronger if you've got it, mind."
His eyes fell on the empty grate with the shriveled chip bags in it, and he snorted. He bent down over the fireplace. They couldn't see what he was doing, but when he drew back a second later, there was a roaring fire there. It filled the whole damp hut with flickering light, and Harry felt the warmth wash over him as though he'd sunk into a hot bath. The giant sat back down on the sofa, which sagged under his weight, and began taking all sorts of things out of the pockets of his coat. A copper kettle, a squashy package of sausages, a poker, a teapot, several chip mugs, and a bottle of some amber liquid that he took a swig from before starting to make tea. Soon the hut was full of the sound and smell of sizzling sausage. Nobody said a thing while the giant was working, but as he slid the first 6 fat, juicy, slightly burnt sausages from the poker, Dudley fidgeted a little. Uncle Vernon said sharply,
"Don't touch anything he gives you, Dudley."
The giant chuckled darkly.
"Your great puddin' of a son don't need fattening any more, Dursley. Don't worry."
He passed the sausages to Harry, who was so hungry he had never tasted anything so wonderful, but he still couldn't take his eyes off the giant. Finally, as nobody seemed about to explain anything, he said, "I'm sorry, but I still don't really know who you are." The giant took a gulp of tea and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
"Call me Hagrid," he said. "Everyone does. And like I told you, I'm Keeper of Keys at Hogwarts. You'll know all about Hogwarts, of course."
No, said Harry. Hagrid looked shocked. "Sorry," Harry said quickly.
"Sorry?"
barked Hagrid, turning to stare at the Dursleys, who shrank back into the shadows.
"It's them that should be sorry. I knew you weren't getting your letters, but I never thought you wouldn't even know about Hogwarts. For crying out loud, did you never wonder where your parents learnt it all?"
"All what?" asked Harry.
"All what?" Hagrid thundered. "Now wait just one second."
He had leapt to his feet. In his anger, he seemed to fill the whole hut. The Dursleys were cowering against the wall.
"Do you mean to tell me," he growled at the Dursleys, "that this boy knows nothing about anything?"
Harry thought this was going a bit far. He had been to school after all, and his marks weren't bad.
"I know some things," he said. "I can, you know, do math and stuff."
But Hagrid simply waved his hand and said,
"About our world, I mean. Your world. My world. Your parents' world."
"What world?" Hagrid looked as if he was about to explode.
"Dursley?"
he boomed. Uncle Vernon, who had gone very pale, whispered something that sounded like "Mimble Wimble." Hagrid stared wildly at Harry.
"But you must know about your mum and dad," he said. "I mean, they're famous. You're famous."
"What? My mum and dad weren't famous, were they?"
"You don't know. You don't know all."
Hagrid ran his fingers through his hair, fixing Harry with a bewildered stare.
"You don't know what you are,"
he said finally. Uncle Vernon suddenly found his voice. "Stop," he commanded. "Stop right there, sir. I forbid you to tell the boy anything." A braver man than Vernon Dursley would have quailed under the furious look Hagrid now gave him. When Hagrid spoke, his every syllable trembled with rage.
"You never told him. Never told him what was in the letter Dumbledore left for him. I was there. I saw Dumbledore leave it, Dursley, and you've kept it from him all these years."
"Kept what from me?" said Harry eagerly.
"Stop! I forbid you!"
yelled Uncle Vernon in panic. Aunt Petunia gave a gasp of horror.
"Arr, go boil your heads, both of you," said Hagrid. "Harry, you're a wizard."
There was silence inside the hut. Only the sea and the whistling wind could be heard.
"I'm a what?" gasped Harry. "A wizard, of course," said Hagrid,
sitting back down on the sofa, which groaned and sank even lower.
"And a thumping good one, I'd say, once you've been trained up a bit. With a mum and dad like yours, what else would you be? And I reckon it's about time you read your letter."
Harry stretched out his hand at last to take the yellowish envelope, addressed in emerald green to Mr. H. Potter, the floor, hut on the rock, the sea. He pulled out the letter and read, "Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Headmaster, Albus Dumbledore. Order of Merlin, First Class, Grand Sorcerer, Chief Warlock, Supreme Mugwump, International Confederation of Wizards. Dear Mr. Potter, we are pleased to inform you that you have been accepted at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Please find enclosed a list of all necessary books and equipment. Term begins on September 1. We await your owl by no later than July 31. Yours sincerely, Minerva McGonagall, Deputy Headmistress." Questions exploded inside Harry's head like fireworks, and he couldn't decide which to ask first. After a few minutes, he stammered,
What does it mean? They await my owl." "Galloping Gorgons, that reminds me," said Hagrid,
clapping a hand to his forehead with enough force to knock over a cart horse. And yet, from another pocket inside his overcoat, he pulled an owl. a real live, rather ruffled-looking owl, a long quill, and a roll of parchment. With his tongue between his teeth, he scribbled a note that Harry could read upside down. "Dear Professor Dumbledore, given Harry his letter, taking him to buy his things tomorrow. Weather's horrible. Hope you're well. Hagrid." Hagrid rolled up the note, gave it to the owl, which clamped it in its beak, went to the door, and threw the owl out into the storm. Then he came back and sat down as though this was as normal as talking on the telephone. Harry realized his mouth was open and closed it quickly.
"Where was I?"
said Hagrid, but at that moment Uncle Vernon, still ashen-faced but looking very angry, moved into the firelight.
"He's not going," he said.
Hagrid grunted.
"I'd like to see a great muggle like you stop him," he said.
"A what?" said Harry, interested.
"A muggle," said Hagrid. "It's what we call non-magic folk like them, and it's your bad luck you grow up in a family of the biggest muggles I ever laid eyes on. We swore when we took him in we'd put a stop to that rubbish," said Uncle Vernon. "Swore we'd stamp it out of him, wizard indeed."
"You knew?" said Harry. "You knew I'm a wizard?"
"Knew?" shrieked Aunt Petunia suddenly. "Knew? Of course we knew. How could you not be? My dratted sister being what she was. Oh, she got a letter just like that and disappeared off to that school and came home every vacation with her pockets full of frog spawn, turning teacups into rats. I was the only one who saw her for what she was, a freak. But for my mother and father, oh no, it was Lily this and Lily that. They were proud of having a witch in the family."
She stopped to draw a deep breath and then went ranting on. It seemed she'd been wanting to say all this for years.
"Then she met that Potter at school, and they left and got married and had you. And of course I knew you'd be just the same, just as strange, just as abnormal. And then, if you please, she went and got herself blown up, and we got landed with you."
Harry had gone very white. As soon as he found his voice, he said, "Blown up? You told me they died in a car crash."
"Car crash?"
roared Hagrid, jumping up so angrily that the Dursleys scuttled back to their corner.
"How could a car crash kill Lily and James Potter? It's an outrage, a scandal. Harry Potter not knowing his own story when every kid in our world knows his name."
"But why? What happened?" Harry asked urgently. The anger faded from Hagrid's face. He looked suddenly anxious.
"I never expected this," he said in a low, worried voice. "I had no idea. When Dumbledore told me there might be trouble getting hold of you, how much you didn't know. Oh, Harry, I don't know if I'm the right person to tell you, but someone's got to. You can't go off to Hogwarts not knowing."
He threw a dirty look at the Dursleys.
"Well, it's best you know as much as I can tell you. Mind, I can't tell you everything. It's a great mystery, parts of it."
He sat down, stared into the fire for a few seconds, and then said,
"It begins, I suppose, with a person called... But it's incredible you don't know his name. Everyone in our world knows."
"Who?"
"Well, I don't like saying the name, if I can help it. No one does."
"Why not?"
"Gulping gargoyles, Harry. People are still scared." "Oh, blimey, this is difficult. See, there was this wizard who went bad. As bad as you could go. Worse, worse than worse. His name was..."
Hagrid gulped, but no words came out. "Could you write it down?" Harry suggested.
"Nah, can't spell it. All right. Voldemort."
Hagrid shuddered.
"Don't make me say it again. Anyway, this wizard, about 20 years ago now, started looking for followers. Got them too. Some were afraid. Some just wanted a bit of his power, 'cause he was getting himself power, all right. Dark days, Harry. Didn't know who to trust. Didn't dare get friendly with strange wizards or witches. Terrible things happened. He was taking over. Of course, some stood up to him, and he killed them, horribly. One of the only safe places left was Hogwarts. Reckon Dumbledore's the only one you know who was afraid of. Didn't dare try taking the school. Not just then, anyway. Now, your mum and dad were as good a witch and wizard as I ever knew. Head boy and girl at Hogwarts in their day. Suppose the mystery is why you-know-who never tried to get him on his side before. Probably knew they were too close to Dumbledore to want anything to do with the dark side. Maybe he thought he could persuade him. Maybe he just wanted him out of the way. All anyone knows is he turned up in the village where you was all living on Halloween 10 years ago. You was just a year old. He came to your house and...
Hagrid suddenly pulled out a very dirty spotted handkerchief and blew his nose with a sound like a foghorn.
"Sorry," he said, "but it's that sad. Knew your mum and dad, and nicer people you couldn't find. Anyway, you know who killed him. And then, and this is the real mystery of the thing, he tried to kill you too. Wanted to make a clean job of it, I suppose, or maybe he just liked killing by then. But he couldn't do it. Never wondered how you got that mark on your forehead? That was no ordinary cut. That's what you get when a powerful evil curse touches you. Took care of your mum and dad and your house, even. But it didn't work on you. And that's why you're famous, Harry. No one ever lived after he decided to kill him. No one except you. And he killed some of the best witches and wizards of the age. The McKinnons, the Bones, the Pruitts. And you was only a baby. And you lived.
Something very painful was going on in Harry's mind. As Hagrid's story came to a close, he saw again the blinding flash of green light, more clearly than he had ever remembered it before, and he remembered something else, for the first time in his life, a high, cold, cruel laugh. Hagrid was watching him sadly.
"Took you from the ruined house myself, on Dumbledore's orders. Brought you to this lot." "Load of old tosh," said Uncle Vernon.
Harry jumped. He had almost forgotten that the Dursleys were there. Uncle Vernon certainly seemed to have got back his courage. He was glaring at Hagrid and his fists were clenched.
"Now you listen here, boy," he snarled. "I accept there's something strange about you. Probably nothing a good beating wouldn't have cured. And as for all this about your parents, well, they were weirdos, no denying it. And the world's better off without them, in my opinion. Ask for all they got. Getting mixed up with these wizarding types. Just what I expected. Always knew they'd come to a sticky end."
But at that moment, Hagrid leapt from the sofa and drew a battered pink umbrella from inside his coat. Pointing this at Uncle Vernon like a sword, he said,
"I'm warning you, Dursley. I'm warning you. One more word."
In danger of being speared on the end of an umbrella by a bearded giant, Uncle Vernon's courage failed again. He flattened himself against the wall and fell silent.
"That's better,"
said Hagrid, breathing heavily and sitting back down on the sofa, which this time sagged right down to the floor. Harry, meanwhile, still had questions to ask, hundreds of them. "But what happened to you know who?"
"Good question, Harry. Disappeared. Vanished. Same night he tried to kill you. Makes you even more famous. That's the biggest mystery, you see. He was getting more and more powerful. Why'd he go? Some say he died. Codswallop, in my opinion. Dunno if he had enough human left in him to die. Some say he's still out there, biding his time, like. But I don't believe it. People who was on his side came back to ours. Some of them came out of kind of trances. Don't reckon they could have done if he was coming back. Most of us reckoned he's still out there somewhere, but lost his powers. Too weak to carry on. 'Cause something about you finished him, Harry. There was something going on that night he hadn't counted on. I don't know what it was. No one does. But something about you stumped him all right.
Hagrid looked at Harry with warmth and respect blazing in his eyes. But Harry, instead of feeling pleased and proud, felt quite sure there had been a horrible mistake. A wizard? Him? How could he possibly be? He'd spent his life being clouted by Dudley and bullied by Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon. If he was really a wizard, why hadn't they been turned into warty toads every time they'd tried to lock him in his cupboard? If he'd once defeated the greatest sorcerer in the world, how come Dudley had always been able to kick him around like a football? Hagrid, he said quietly, I think you must have made a mistake. I don't think I can be a wizard. To his surprise, Hagrid chuckled.
Not a wizard? Never made things happen when you were scared or angry?
Harry looked into the fire. Now he came to think about it. Every odd thing that had ever made his aunt and uncle furious with him had happened when he, Harry, had been upset or angry. Chased by Dudley's gang, he had somehow found himself out of their reach. Dreading going to school with that ridiculous haircut, he'd managed to make it grow back. And the very last time Dudley had hit him, hadn't he got his revenge without even realizing he was doing it? Hadn't he set a boa constrictor on him? Harry looked back at Hagrid, smiling, and saw that Hagrid was positively beaming at him.
See? Said Hagrid. Harry Potter, not a wizard. You wait. You'll be right famous at Hogwarts.
But Uncle Vernon wasn't going to give in without a fight.
Haven't I told you he's not going? He hissed. He's going to Stonewall High, and he'll be grateful for it. I've read those letters, and he needs all sorts of rubbish, spell books and wands, and if he wants to go, a great muggle like you won't stop him, growled Hagrid. Stop Lily and James Potter's son going to Hogwarts? You're mad. His name's been down ever since he was born. He's off to the finest school of witchcraft and wizardry in the world. 7 years there, and he won't know himself. He'll be with youngsters of his own sort for a change, and he'll be under the greatest headmaster Hogwarts ever had, Albus Dumbledore.
I am not paying for some crackpot old fool to teach him magic tricks,
yelled Uncle Vernon. But he had finally gone too far. Hagrid seized his umbrella and whirled it over his head.
Never, he thundered, insult Albus Dumbledore in front of me.
He brought the umbrella swishing down through the air to point at Dudley. There was a flash of violet light, a sound like a firecracker, a sharp squeal, and the next second Dudley was dancing on the spot with his hands clasped over his fat bottom, howling in pain. When he turned his back on them, Harry saw a curly pig's tail poking through a hole in his trousers. Uncle Vernon roared. Pulling Aunt Petunia and Dudley into the other room, he cast one last terrified look at Hagrid and slammed the door behind them. Hagrid looked down at his umbrella and stroked his beard.
"Shouldn't have lost me temper," he said ruefully. "But it didn't work anyway. Meant to turn him into a pig. But I suppose he was so much like a pig anyway there wasn't much left to do."
He cast a sideways look at Harry under his bushy eyebrows.
"Be grateful if you didn't mention that to anyone at Hogwarts," he said. "I'm, not supposed to do magic, strictly speaking. I was allowed to do a bit to follow you and get your letters to you and stuff. One of the reasons I was so keen to take on the job."
"Why aren't you supposed to do magic?" asked Harry.
"Oh, well, I was at Hogwarts myself, but I, got expelled, to tell you the truth. In me third year, they snapped me wand in half and everything. But Dumbledore let me stay on as gamekeeper. Great man, Dumbledore."
"Why were you expelled?"
"It's getting late and we got lots to do tomorrow," said Hagrid loudly. "Gotta get up to town, get all your books and that."
He took off his thick black coat and threw it to Harry.
"You can kip under that," he said. "Don't mind if it wriggles a bit. I think I still got a couple of dormice in one of the pockets."
Chapter 5, Diagon Alley. Harry woke early the next morning Although he could tell it was daylight, he kept his eyes shut tight. It was a dream, he told himself firmly. I dreamed a giant called Hagrid came to tell me I was going to a school for wizards. When I open my eyes, I'll be at home in my cupboard. There was suddenly a loud tapping noise. And there's Aunt Petunia knocking on the door, Harry thought, his heart sinking. But he still didn't open his eyes. It had been such a good dream. Tap, tap, tap. All right, Harry mumbled. I'm getting up. He sat up and Hagrid's heavy coat fell off him. The hut was full of sunlight. The storm was over. Hagrid himself was asleep on the collapsed sofa, and there was an owl rapping its claw on the window, a newspaper held in its beak. Harry scrambled to his feet. So happy, he felt as though a large balloon was swelling inside him. He went straight to the window and jerked it open. The owl swooped in and dropped the newspaper on top of Hagrid, who didn't wake up. The owl then fluttered onto the floor and began to attack Hagrid's coat. "Don't do that!" Harry tried to wave the owl out of the way, but it snapped its beak fiercely at him and carried on savaging the coat. "Hagrid," said Harry loudly, "there's an owl!"
"Pay him!"
Hagrid grunted into the sofa. "What?"
"He wants paying for delivering the paper. Look in the pockets."
Hagrid's coat seemed to be made of nothing but pockets. Bunches of keys, slug pellets, balls of string, peppermint humbugs, tea bags. Finally, Harry pulled out a handful of strange-looking coins.
"Give him 5 canuts,
said Hagrid sleepily.
"Canuts? The little bronze ones."
Harry counted out 5 little bronze coins, and the owl held out his legs so Harry could put the money into a small leather pouch tied to it. Then he flew off through the open window. Hagrid yawned loudly, sat up and stretched.
"Best be off, Harry. Lots to do today. Got to get up to London and buy all your stuff for school."
Harry was turning over the wizard coins and looking at them. He had just thought of something that made him feel as though the happy balloon inside him had got a puncture.
Hagrid?
Said
Hagrid, who was pulling on his huge boots.
"I haven't got any money, and you heard Uncle Vernon last night. He won't pay for me to go and learn magic."
"Don't worry about that," said Hagrid, standing up and scratching his head. "Do you think your parents didn't leave you anything?"
"But if their house was destroyed..."
"They didn't keep their gold in the house, boy. Nah. First stop for us is Gringotts, Wizard's Bank. Have a sausage. They're not bad cold, and I wouldn't say no to a bit of your birthday cake, neither."
"Wizards have banks?"
"Just the one, Gringotts, run by goblins."
Harry dropped the bit of sausage he was holding.
"Goblins?"
"Yeah. So you'd be mad to try and rob it, I'll tell you that. Never mess with goblins, Harry. Gringotts is the safest place in the world for anything you want to keep safe, except maybe Hogwarts. As a matter of fact, I got to visit Gringotts anyway, for Dumbledore, Hogwarts business."
Hagrid drew himself up proudly.
"He usually gets me to do important stuff for him, fetching you, getting things from Gringotts. Knows he can trust me, see? Got everything? Come on, then."
Harry followed Hagrid out onto the rock. The sky was quite clear now, and the sea gleamed in the sunlight. The boat Uncle Vernon had hired was still there, with a lot of water in the bottom after the storm.
"How did you get here?"
Harry asked, looking around for another boat.
"Flew,"
said Hagrid.
"Flew?"
"Yeah, but we'll go back in this. Not supposed to use magic, now I've got you."
They settled down in the boat, Harry still staring at Hagrid, trying to imagine him flying.
"Seems a shame to row, though," said Hagrid, giving Harry another of his sideways looks. "If I was to, speed things up a bit, would you mind not mentioning it at Hogwarts?"
"Of course not," said Harry,
eager to see more magic. Hagrid pulled out the pink umbrella again, tapped it twice on the side of the boat, and they sped off towards land.
"Why would you be mad to try and rob Gringotts?" Harry asked.
"Spells, enchantments," said Hagrid,
unfolding his newspaper as he spoke.
"They say there's dragons guarding the high security vaults, and then you got to find your way. Gringotts is hundreds of miles under London, see? Deep under the underground. You'd die of hunger trying to get out, even if you did manage to get your hands on summat.
Harry sat and thought about this while Hagrid read his newspaper, The Daily Prophet. Harry had learnt from Uncle Vernon that people liked to be left alone while they did this, but it was very difficult. He'd never had so many questions in his life.
"Ministry of Magic, messing things up as usual," Hagrid muttered, turning the page.
"There's a Ministry of Magic?" Harry asked, before he could stop himself.
"Of course," said Hagrid. "They wanted Dumbledore for Minister, of course, but he'd never leave Hogwarts. So old Cornelius Fudge got the job, bungler if ever there was one. So he pelts Dumbledore with owls every morning, asking for advice.
But what does a Ministry of Magic do?"
"Well, their main job is to keep it from the muggles that there's still witches and wizards up and down the country."
"Why?"
"Why? Blimey, Harry, everyone'd be wanting magic solutions to their problems. Nah, we're best left alone."
At this moment the boat bumped gently into the harbour wall. Hagrid folded up his newspaper, and they clambered up the stone steps onto the street. Passers-by stared a lot at Hagrid as they walked through the little town to the station. Harry couldn't blame them. Not only was Hagrid twice as tall as anyone else, he kept pointing at perfectly ordinary things like parking meters and saying loudly,
"You see that, Harry? Things these muggles dream up, eh?"
"Hagrid," said Harry, panting a bit as he ran to keep up, "did you say there are dragons at Gringotts?"
"Well, so they say," said Hagrid. "Crikey, I'd like a dragon."
"You'd like one?"
"Wanted one ever since I was a kid. Here we go."
They had reached the station. There was a train to London in 5 minutes' time. Hagrid, who didn't understand muggle money, as he called it, gave the bills to Harry so he could buy their tickets. People stared more than ever on the train. Hagrid took up two seats and sat knitting what looked like a canary yellow circus tent.
"Still got your letter, Harry?"
he asked, as he counted stitches. Harry took the parchment envelope out of his pocket.
"Good," said Hagrid. "There's a list there of everything you need."
Harry unfolded a second piece of paper he hadn't noticed the night before and read, "Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Uniform. First-year students will require 1, 3 sets of plain work robes, black, 2, 1 plain pointed hat, black for day wear, 3, 1 pair of protective gloves, dragon hide or similar, 4, 1 winter cloak, black, silver fastenings. Please note that all pupils' clothes should carry name tags. Course books. All students should have a copy of each of the following. The Standard Book of Spells, Grade 1, by Miranda Goshawk. A History of Magic by Bathilda Bagshot. Magical Theory by Adalbert Waffling. A Beginner's Guide to Transfiguration by Emmerich Switch. 1,000 Magical Herbs and Fungi by Phyllida Spore. Magical Drafts and Potions by Arsenius Jigger. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by Newt Scamander. The Dark Forces, A Guide to Self-Protection by Quentin Trimble. Other equipment, 1 wand, 1 cauldron, pewter, standard size 2, 1 set glass or crystal phials, 1 telescope, 1 set brass scales. Students may also bring an owl, or a cat, or a toad. Parents are reminded that first years are not allowed their own broomsticks.
"Can we buy all this in London?" Harry wondered aloud. "If you know where to go," said Hagrid.
Harry had never been to London before. Although Hagrid seemed to know where he was going, he was obviously not used to getting there in an ordinary way. He got stuck in the ticket barrier on the underground and complained loudly that the seats were too small and the trains too slow.
"I don't know how the muggles manage without magic," he said, as they climbed a broken-down escalator that led up to a bustling road lined with shops.
Hagrid was so huge that he parted the crowd easily. All Harry had to do was keep close behind him. They passed bookshops, music stores, hamburger restaurants, and cinemas, but nowhere that looked as if it could sell you a magic wand. This was just an ordinary street full of ordinary people.
Could there really be piles of wizard gold buried miles beneath them? Were there really shops that sold spell books and broomsticks? Might this not all be some huge joke that the Dursleys had cooked up? If Harry hadn't known that the Dursleys had no sense of humour, he might have thought so. Yet somehow, even though everything Hagrid had told him so far was unbelievable, Harry couldn't help trusting him.
"This is it," said Hagrid, coming to a halt. "The Leaky Cauldron. It's a famous place."
It was a tiny, grubby-looking pub. If Hagrid hadn't pointed it out, Harry wouldn't have noticed it was there. The people hurrying by didn't glance at it. Their eyes slid from the big bookshop on one side to the record shop on the other, as if they couldn't see the Leaky Cauldron at all. In fact, Harry had the most peculiar feeling that only he and Hagrid could see it. Before he could mention this, Hagrid had steered him inside. For a famous place, it was very dark and shabby. A few old women were sitting in a corner drinking tiny glasses of sherry. One of them was smoking a long pipe. A little man in a top hat was talking to the old bartender, who was quite bald and looked like a toothless walnut. The low buzz of chatter stopped when they walked in. Everyone seemed to know Hagrid. They waved and smiled at him, and the bartender reached for a glass, saying,
"The usual, Hagrid."
"Can't, Tom. I'm on Hogwarts business," said Hagrid, clapping his great hand on Harry's shoulder and making Harry's knees buckle.
"Good Lord," said the bartender, peering at Harry. "Is this... can this be..."
The Leaky Cauldron had suddenly gone completely still and silent.
"Bless my soul," whispered the old bartender. "Harry Potter. Oh, what an honour."
He hurried out from behind the bar, rushed towards Harry and seized his hand, tears in his eyes.
"Welcome back, Mr. Potter. Welcome back."
Harry didn't know what to say. Everyone was looking at him. The old woman with the pipe was puffing on it, without realizing it had gone out. Hagrid was beaming. Then there was a great scraping of chairs, and the next moment Harry found himself shaking hands with everyone in the Leaky Cauldron.
"Doris Crockford, Mr. Potter, can't believe I'm meeting you at last."
"So proud, Mr. Potter, I'm just so proud.
Always wanted to shake your hand. I'm all of a flutter."
"Delighted, Mr. Potter, just can't tell you. Diggle's the name. Daedalus Diggle."
"I've seen you before," said Harry, as Daedalus Diggle's top hat fell off in his excitement. "You bowed to me once in a shop."
"He remembers," cried Daedalus Diggle, looking round at everyone. "Did you hear that? He remembers me."
Harry shook hands again and again. Doris Crockford kept coming back for more. A pale young man made his way forward very nervously. One of his eyes was twitching.
"Professor Quirrell," said Hagrid. "Harry, Professor Quirrell will be one of your teachers at Hogwarts."
"P-p-Potter,"
stammered Professor Quirrell, grasping Harry's hand.
"Can't to tell you how pleased I am to meet you."
"What sort of magic do you teach, Professor Quirrell?"
"The defence against the dark arts,"
muttered Professor Quirrell, as though he'd rather not think about it.
"Not that you need it, eh, Potter?"
He laughed nervously.
"You'll be getting all your equipment, I suppose. I've got to pick up a new book on vampire myself."
He looked terrified at the very thought. But the others wouldn't let Professor Quirrell keep Harry to himself. It took almost 10 minutes to get away from them all. At last, Hagrid managed to make himself heard over the babble.
"Must get on. Lots to buy. Come on, Harry."
Doris Crockford shook Harry's hand one last time, and Hagrid led them through the bar and out into a small walled courtyard where there was nothing but a trash can and a few weeds. Hagrid grinned at Harry.
"Told you, didn't I? Told you was famous. Even Professor Quirrell was trembling to meet you. Mind you, he's usually trembling."
"Is he always that nervous?"
"Oh, yeah. Poor bloke. Brilliant mind. He was fine while he was studying out of books, but then he took a year off to get some first-hand experience. They say he met vampires in the Black Forest, and there was a nasty bit of trouble with a hag. Never been the same since.
Scared of the students, scared of his own subject. Now, where's me umbrella?
Vampires? Hags? Harry's head was swimming. Hagrid, meanwhile, was counting bricks in the wall above the trash can.
3 up, 2 across, he muttered. Right, stand back, Harry.
He tapped the wall 3 times with the point of his umbrella. The brick he had touched quivered. It wriggled. In the middle, a small hole appeared. It grew wider and wider. A second later, they were facing an archway, large enough even for Hagrid, an archway onto a cobbled street that twisted and turned out of sight.
"Welcome," said Hagrid, "to Diagon Alley."
He grinned at Harry's amazement. They stepped through the archway. Harry looked quickly over his shoulder and saw the archway shrink instantly back into solid wall. The sun shone brightly on a stack of cauldrons outside the nearest shop.
"Cauldrons all sizes, copper, brass, pewter, silver, self-stirring, collapsible," said a sign hanging over them.
"Yeah, you'll be needing one," said Hagrid, "but we got to get your money first."
Harry wished he had about 8 more eyes. He turned his head in every direction as they walked up the street, trying to look at everything at once. The shops, the things outside them, the people doing their shopping. A plump woman outside, an apothecary, was shaking her head as they passed, saying,
"Dragon liver, 17 sickles an ounce? They're mad."
A low, soft hooting came from a dark shop with a sign saying, "Eyelop's Owl Emporium, tawny, screech, barn, brown, and snowy." Several boys of about Harry's age had their noses pressed against a window with broomsticks in it.
"Look!" Harry heard one of them say, "the new Nimbus 2000, fastest ever."
There were shops selling robes, shops selling telescopes and strange silver instruments Harry had never seen before, windows stacked with barrels of bat spleens and eel's eyes, tottering piles of spell books, quills and rolls of parchment, potion bottles, globes of the moon.
"Gringotts," said Hagrid.
They had reached a snowy white building that towered over the other little shops. Standing beside its burnished bronze doors, wearing a uniform of scarlet and gold, was...
"Yeah, that's a goblin,"
said Hagrid quietly as they walked up the white stone steps towards him. The goblin was about a head shorter than Harry. He had a swarthy, clever face, a pointed beard, and, Harry noticed, very long fingers and feet. He bowed as they walked inside. Now they were facing a second pair of doors, silver this time, with words engraved upon them. "Enter, stranger, but take heed of what awaits the sin of greed, for those who take but do not earn must pay most dearly in their turn. So if you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours, thief, you have been warned, beware of finding more than treasure there."
"Like I said, you'd be mad to try and rob it," said Hagrid.
A pair of goblins bowed them through the silver doors, and they were in a vast marble hall. About 100 more goblins were sitting on high stools behind a long counter, scribbling in large ledgers, weighing coins in brass scales, examining precious stones through eyeglasses. There were too many doors to count leading off the hall, and yet more goblins were showing people in and out of these. Hagrid and Harry made for the counter.
"Morning," said Hagrid to a free goblin. "We've come to take some money out of Mr. Harry Potter's safe."
"You have his key, sir."
"I got it here somewhere," said Hagrid.
And he started emptying his pockets onto the counter, scattering a handful of mouldy dog biscuits over the goblin's book of numbers. The goblin wrinkled his nose. Harry watched the goblin on the right weighing a pile of rubies as big as glowing coals.
"Got it,"
said Hagrid at last, holding up a tiny golden key. The goblin looked at it closely.
"That seems to be in order."
"And I've also got a letter here from Professor Dumbledore," said Hagrid importantly, throwing out his chest. "It's about the you-know-what in Vault 713.
The goblin read the letter carefully.
"Very well,"
he said, handing it back to Hagrid.
"I will have someone take you down to both vaults. Griphook!"
Griphook was yet another goblin.
Once Hagrid had crammed all the dog biscuits back inside his pockets, he and Harry followed Griphook towards one of the doors leading off the hall. "What's the you-know-what in Vault 713?" Harry asked.
"Can't tell you that," said Hagrid mysteriously. "Very secret. Hogwarts business. Dumbledore's trusted me."